I agreed that we would have a discussion this afternoon on the new Lutheran Church. There are any number of directions that we could have gone with this discussion, but there were several people who were interested in a discussion of the issue of quotas, especially as it relates to the third report of the Commission for New Lutheran Church. And there were some people who were interested in some kind of a historical vignette of how the Commission may have gotten to where it got on this particular issue. It is predicted in Lutheran Forum and in several other periodicals that the whole question of quotas as it relates itself to the inclusiveness of the new Lutheran Church will be a major topic of discussion. Indeed, for those of you who have attended some synod and district conventions of the three churches, you probably have already been subjected either to the joys or to the terrors of some of those discussions. Well, those of you who are visiting Holden Village and who are participating in this discussion this afternoon can now get the straight scoop, as some people like to say in theological circles, empirically verifiable data on what went on and what might be. Some of you probably read also that the Commission has had a meeting since the round of discussions in the districts and synods of the AELC, ALC, and the LCA. And I'll probably be able to share some fresh information on the response of the Commission to reports or readouts from the churches. I'm told that we always identify ourselves at the beginning. I'm Will Hertzfeld, and I'm pastor of Bethlehem Lutheran Church in Oakland. Bethlehem Church is a member of the Association of Evangelical Lutheran Churches. In addition to doing those kinds of things, I have other responsibilities in the church, some of which are new, at least beginning in September, when I will join Drs. Preuss and Crumley as one of the three presiding bishops of the church. We hope until the new church begins. Number one. Major issues, so that we are all at rest on this, will not prevent the new Lutheran Church from being born. There is no issue, in my opinion, which will prevent the beginning of the new Lutheran Church. In other words, all of the struggles that we might have between now and 1988 will not prevent the new church from being born. There will be problems and issues unresolved waiting for the new church to begin and waiting for the new church to solve them. When the next generation of Lutherans arrive on the scene, some of those problems, or problems very similar to them, will face Lutherans in the United States, unless, and the world, unless, of course, we are privileged to witness the revelation of the righteousness of God. Some people refer to it as judgment, and there are even a few Lutherans who, not so casually, referred to it as the rapture. There's a tendency to try and trivialize issues with that statement as a backdrop. But that statement was not made to trivialize the issue, but more or less to place it in the context of hopeful dialogue, hopeful discussion, and indeed hopeful struggle. Brief historical note. The old Committee on Lutheran Unity, in its final sessions, that was the group that preceded the Commission for a New Lutheran Church, related to its recommendations to the three churches several things. One of them was a part of the overarching recommendation that a commission for a new Lutheran church be authorized by the three Lutheran churches. In its statement regarding the request for the three churches to form a commission for a new Lutheran church, the Committee for Lutheran Unity made some suggestions as to the size and makeup of that commission, and raised with the churches the question of whether or no the commission would be an inclusive one. Most Lutherans know how the debate was resolved and how the churches did, in fact, accept the Committee on Lutheran Unity's suggestions in the selection of its members to the commission. And as a result of these suggestions, the lay participation on the commission is a decisive majority figure. The participation of women on the commission for a new Lutheran church is far out of proportion to the participation of women on any other board or committee of the church. And the participation of, quotes, ethnic minorities far outstrip the present membership of ethnic minorities in the three church bodies. Combined, ethnic groups would make up, combined, these groups would make up maybe 2% of the total membership of the churches. So minority and other than English-speaking participants, and some people added including Germans, Swedes, and Norwegians, are in excess of their numbers in the churches. The first meeting of this strange and motley gathering of Lutherans in Madison, Wisconsin, was one that was still euphoric, because we, those of us who were at the convention, at either one of the conventions, could still hear in our minds the cheering and the applause as the three churches did indeed vote for the death of three Lutheran churches and the birth of a new one. So the joys of the convention decisions, not long before the meeting of the commission, were still with us. But it was not long after we gathered in Madison, Wisconsin, that the sobering effects of our imminent struggle began to take hold. Some, mostly white males over 50, were in a hurry to get on with the work of the commission, adopt a set of rules, use Robert's rules of order, develop policy by a majority vote, make recommendations to the churches in much the same way as they have been made for years. But then all of a sudden there were some members of the commission who did not want to do it this way. Now that particular encounter has been described in all kinds of ways, but I choose to describe it as our first interminable encounter by people who suffered from hemispheric problems. Not Western, Eastern hemisphere, but hemispheres of the brain. Let me just explain what I mean by that. There is a side of the brain that's cold and calculating and business-oriented and wants to get on with the work. And then there's a side of the brain that wants to massage the thing, get to know it, enjoy whatever about it that's aesthetically beautiful. And so there were members of the commission who just wanted to do something that was akin to engaging in touchy-feely sessions and enjoying the 70 people being gathered together, and who would either be blessed to be together for all these years from that point until a point in time called 1988, or cursed or condemned to being together. So one could say that a rainbow-like coalition developed, and we found ourselves having a major hemispheric problem and resolved it by, first of all, a lengthy series of small group discussions. And sometimes, as we just did in Valley Forge, using the tricky committee of the whole concept in attempting to achieve consensus as opposed to ramming things through by majority vote or Robert's Rules of Order. Totally unprecedented in the history of the Lutheran Church's way of conducting itself. At least I have not seen anything like it other than at some Luther League conventions or Walther League conventions. And occasionally when I visited an American Lutheran Church women's meeting or a Lutheran Church women's meeting, we've seen that kind of behavior. Well, so much for that. In report number 3, we hear under the statement of purpose these words. Let me just read those. For those of you who don't get the Lutheran Standard or the Lutheran or AELC Forward, I'd suggest that you write to the commission and get copies of this report. We had to look for a day and a half to find one here in the village. Thanks to Dan Erlandis having one of these buried under a stack of unread periodicals. Norm Fokers rescued the respectability of the commission from Dan Erlander's chalet. But let me read the statement in part. The church has been called and sent into the world by the triune God. Therefore the church shall proclaim the gospel of God's reconciling act in Christ. Preach the word, administer the sacraments, and worship God through lives of prayer, praise, thanksgiving, and service. Remain faithful to the apostolic gospel, recognize it as authoritative for teaching and practice, and pass it on to future generations. Join with others through prayer and action to manifest the unity given to the people of God, and work for the renewal of the entire church. Conduct its ministry with a global consciousness and a sense of responsibility consistent with its understanding of God as creator, redeemer, and sanctifier of all persons and all things. Invite and include persons in membership, leadership, and mission irrespective of race, sex, or class. Work for the dignity of all people through advocacy for justice and direct response to human need, standing in solidarity with the voiceless and the powerless, the poor and the exploited, the homeless and the hungry. Recognize the setting of daily life as the primary arena for the exercise of Christian calling. Enable its members to discern and exercise the various gifts which God has given them in order to strengthen and enrich their individual callings in the world and their common life in Christ. Generate resources that will equip members to worship, learn, serve, and witness. Provide structures and processes of decision-making that will foster mutuality and the participation of those affected by the decisions. Now, how is this to be done is spoken to in the second section of the purpose statement, how we fulfill these purposes. It goes on to describe that the church will carry out a series of objectives, and those objectives are listed A through Y on page 33 of the Lutheran. It will probably be another page of some other magazine or periodical. Saying and doing. The qualitative difference between making major rhetorical contributions to the problems or to the issues and doing something about them. It's been a disparity extant among church persons which some of us would like to see us overcome. Hence, the commission, as many expected it to do, does recommend a series of things to the churches, and included in these things is the notion of quota. The quota system is uncovered in a section of the report which has to do with the preliminary design for the new church and what some of the implications of the design suggested might be. There are, for example, under the design, a discussion of quotas 1, two options related to the question of representation, lay and clergy. Option 1 is that 2/3 of any legislative body be lay people and 1/3 be clergy. Option 2, very similar to that, would be 3/4 lay and 1/4 clergy or professional church person. Unresolved yet would be where teachers, directors of Christian education, etc., would go. We're still working on that one, whether they are to be placed in, quotes, clergy or specific ministry category or someplace else. The second one is that at least 1/2 women and 1/2 men make up any legislative section of the new church. This, of course, is out of proportion to the numbers of women and men. Latest counts show that women do outnumber men in all three of the churches and will undoubtedly continue to outnumber men in the new church. I don't quite know how to explain that apart from my own experiences at Bethlehem, but I'm not going to get into trying to explain that now. The third recommendation related to quotas is that at least 20% of persons of color and or persons with a primary language other than English be a part of the legislative makeup of the new church. Comment. There's been, of course, some debate about it. There's a question as to whether or not white male clergy would not be underrepresented by this suggestion of quotas. That is a question which we, of course, will have to debate for a while. A couple of clergy persons from our church called me and said, we do believe that white male clergy ought to be represented in direct proportion to our numbers. And we are very uneasy about any representation other than in direct proportion to our numbers. And of course, one of the brothers became highly indignant when I suggested that I might be able to represent him. That of course is a highly debatable question, but then one has to ask who has been representing those of us over the years. And of course, I think that we know, and at the moment I have no real arguments about how well I was represented. Another question is, why can't we trust the Spirit, the almighty sovereign Spirit of God, to resolve these kinds of questions for us? And another is, let's use quotas in terms of church body representatives, but only in that regard. And what we mean by that is, no matter how we cut it, we will have to say, at least until 1988, that any task forces, discussion groups, or any group that would have anything to do with the makeup of the new Lutheran church, we will always have to have a certain number of LCA representatives, a certain number of ALC representatives, and a certain number of AELC representatives. We would not imagine going into any kind of a discussion without having those three churches represented. And the question is that quotas or is that not quotas? And the answer is, yes, that's quotas, but let's keep those quotas, because that's the only way in which we can assure equitable participation of all churches in those issues related to the formation of a new church. Then there's a reaction that says, let's not fool around with quotas at all. The new church should have a watchdog commission to ensure equity for all of its people. And one member of the commission said, just like the Presbyterians have in the formation of their new church. However, that particular person neglected to read further into the document that the watchdog commission formed by the Presbyterians in their new church process now has at least five other caucuses and committees watching the watchdog commission. In other words, the formation of the watchdog commission then added fuel to the proliferation and the rise of what we have called in the mainline white church denominations caucuses. Some of us some years ago did a paper entitled Caucuses and Caucasians. There's a black caucus and an Hispanic caucus and an Asian caucus and a Native American caucus and women's caucus. And these caucuses, by definition, are groups without power and are never a part of the mainstream, mainline discussions of the church. Well, there are some who, in response to the suggestion of a watchdog commission, would suggest that the watchdogs really ought to be the leaders of the churches. And the leaders of the churches should have some way of imposing a new kind of discipline upon themselves so that the objectives might be achieved. Well, at the commission meeting in Valley Forge, it was reported to the commission that there was an overwhelming negative reaction to the question of quotas, not, well, to certain parts of the suggestions related to quotas. There seemed to be little or no problem with the suggestions regarding lay and clergy, although there were some clergy who were concerned about how soon they should give up their ordination papers and move towards the power group as lay people. And then there were also some concern as to whether or not the figures related to, quotes, ethnic minority groups, close quotes, were too high, which, of course, resulted in the commission's making certain concessions in its addendum relative to that section on quotas. The reduction is by 10%. So the addendum to the section on quotas will read 10% ethnic minority or people of color or people with a language other than English. Now, the personal note is that's still about 2% higher than I had expected it to be. But if I'm quoted outside of this room or if this tape is played, I will deny having made that statement. The understanding of the church in relationship to the quota questions are raised like, is it biblical or is it Lutheran? What of sections of the USA where we have no people of color who are Lutheran, that is? There's hardly a section of this country that don't have some people of color now, including Holden Village. But at any rate, we must, and it's my thought, my opinion, we must impose some things upon ourselves in order to have a truly new Lutheran church. Those who have views from the underside of history, as well as visions of a new church, must be in a position to share those views and visions, while they may be agreed with or disagreed with these visions. Nevertheless, these visions must be respected. Otherwise, quota statements that appear in most of the official statements and the bureaucratic and the positive sense work of the churches won't mean much. Like, for example, the setting of goals to recruit so many minority persons for the ministry of the church by such and such a time won't mean anything. That's true in all of the churches, especially in the, quotes, too big churches, in their goals for minority ministry statement, or in their goals for minority recruitment statements, or otherwise invitations to membership in the church of women, people of color, and marginal persons in general, will not be taken too seriously by those persons. Now, as a commissioner, I'm willing to listen to your responses to this brief statement. Maybe speak to any concerns that or questions that you might have. And I do that with the 30 minutes that we have left here, and also with the time left before Ellen calls the board into session, whereupon we will be too busy to talk about anything other than the business of Holden. Holden's board has no quarter system, except so many ALC, LCMS, LCA, and most recently AELC persons were added because we became a, quote, legitimate church several years ago, which now qualifies us to be a part of the Holden quota schema. I think that's enough. Yes, sir.
I would guess that most of the grassroots lay in the congregation like where we are still view this as a church merger rather than a new church, and I think that their kind of response typifies that, that they don't want to change very rapidly and very much, and we really are talking about a new church. It's the commission and the people in it, it sounds like their vision is new church. So,
somehow,
this gap has to be
reached. Well said. Early in the discussions, again, of the old committee for Lutheran Unity, we were using words like merger. And I recall a banker friend of mine saying, "Sisters and brothers, we are being plagued by a plethora of conglomerates." And I didn't quite understand what he meant. As far as I was concerned, he could have been describing a group of flying insects that were going to eat the church up or something. But what he was describing, of course, was a series of mergers which have been taking place in the United States for a number of years now, and people are either turned on by them or turned off by them, or they go ho-hum about them. For example, Ford Motor Company is not Ford Motor Company anymore. It's now Libby Owens, Philco, Ford, something else. So that's, in it, what it represents now is a merger. You know, the creation of one thing while giving the appearance of retaining, you know, the identity and the purpose of the several things. And we said we really don't want to be like that. In other words, we don't want to talk about merger because a merger actually forecloses on any possibility of so much new happening with the church. We'll have ALC, AELC, LCA retained in some kind of merger. So we started talking really new church on the old committee, and that's how Commission for a New Lutheran Church got its name, et cetera, et cetera. Primarily because we thought that if we began talking about it, it would indeed catch on in the church and thereby become a self-fulfilling prophecy. In other words, talk about it until you start to really capture the vision that it is possible for three Lutheran churches to die and for a new church to be born. And of course, what do we mean by new church is, you know, well, it means new church. Doesn't mean that we won't have old people. I intend to be a part of it, and I'll be quite old by 1988 for several reasons. But that you are correct. There are a number of lay people who view it as a merger. Intend not to be too excited about prospects of a new church.
What's your personal feeling about the quotas?
What's my personal feeling about the quotas? I think that the fact that we have to impose upon ourselves the quota system is a judgment on our dullness and ineffectual. It's a statement about the unified institutional racist and sexist mentality of the church. It's a commentary on the church's reflecting whatever the prevailing attitudes of the society around it is. That's the way I view Corinth. Now, of course, it's probably one of the worst-kept secrets in the church that I authored the original quota statement and fought it through the old Committee on Lutheran Unity. And the reason that happened was because I did not believe that it was possible for the church to create a commission like the commission we've got unless it did it legislatively, deliberately. I don't think that we could leave it to chance and have it happen the way it happened, with the numbers of women, laypersons, and persons of color on the commission. So we had to make, indeed it was not legislated because the committee could not order the churches to do it, but the churches somehow picked up the suggestions that came from the committee and made the suggestions their own. There were some of you who were part of those conventions, and you can tell from your own vantage point what happened and what some of the results were. So we had to be deliberate about it. In other words, you heard me say, Gene, that unless we impose certain kinds of discipline on ourselves to work our way out of the problems that we've created over a period of time, we simply make major rhetorical contributions to the problem and we do nothing about it. Chuck and then Bob, we'll just go around this way. Chuck? Yeah.
As an unorthodox person who works for the church, I've been especially interested in the debate over clergy lay distribution. And it has struck me as strange that some of those who complain the most about quotas and the fact that it's something new, claiming it's something new, don't seem to recognize that we've always used quotas, at least for decades, as long as I've been alive, for national and regional legislative bodies, it's usually been 50% clergy, 50% lay. Those who say, let everybody be represented in direct proportion to their numbers in the church. If they got their way in the ALC, currently with a 1,000 member national convention, we'd have 3 ordained persons,
yeah,
and 997 lay people.
That's correct.
That's the proportion.
Yes.
And I don't think they mean that. I don't think either lay or clergy mean that when they call for it. I'm interested, therefore, that you say that the proposal for either 2/3 or 3/4 lay presence in legislative bodies in the church has been relatively well accepted. And I just want to say a little more about that. Because I do still hear clergy say, we're being disenfranchised. As though a lot of lay people have not always been disenfranchised, if that means getting to vote at every convention.
Yeah, I said relatively well accepted with the exception of some clergy who, direct quote of myself now, Chuck, with the exception of some clergy who were now beginning to look for ways of giving up their ordination papers so that they could join
the
power.
Power.
Yeah. Yeah, there are all kinds of, you see, the introduction of the quota system has now, and Chuck is correct, we've been using it in any number of ways for ever since I can remember. And we certainly began using it in earnest.
But not for
earnest.
Gender or race.
Yeah, but not for gender or race,
new.
You see, and that's the new part. And that now disqualifies, any discussion of quota at all now. In fact, we had one person on the commission offer a resolution that we totally eliminate any references to quota henceforth, now, and forevermore. And of course, the person who made the resolution was the only person who voted for the resolution. At least the commission now has struggled to the extent where it knows that it would be unfair, and it would be terribly, we would be derelict in our own duties and responsibilities were we to try and remove the quota debate from the churches. That debate has to go on for a while. I said before, I have no emotional investment at the moment as to how it turns out, except that I know that the debate will be healthy for the church, and it could conceivably guarantee what we mean when we use the word inclusive, or a church where equity, participation of all of its members become the hoyle for the churches. And it's a voluntary thing as opposed to something that has to be legislative. Robert?
Well, comment on how you see or how that has been dealt with in terms of purpose statement of we're doing these things without regard for. And it seems to me that we may be doing things with more specific regard for than what we have ever done before. And maybe the one that needs to be changed is the purpose statement, more than the quota statement. Because mm-hmm. it does seem to me that the two are in conflict with each other.
Mm-hmm. Well, they are. At least the debate about quotas does lend a certain amount of incredibleness to the purpose statement. For indeed, if one looks at the purpose statement and says, aha, I mean, literally says, now is that a purpose statement or is that a purpose statement? Then the next, you know, the big question is, well, how do you get at a purpose statement like that? I mean, how do you get at a statement like that without deliberately arranging the room so that you've got full advantage of the participation of persons who heretofore have been systematically disenfranchised and dispossessed when it comes to the right to participate in the fulfilling of noble purposes like these? Well, I don't want to see the purpose statement thrown out. I believe that is the only reason that a church should exist. There is no other reason for the existence of the church than to fulfill the purposes outlined in the purpose statement. It is probably the most faithful statement that I have read or participated in the drafting of to the ministry of Jesus Christ as I understand it. Or as those of us who were in the Bible study this morning, at least it shows the way Jesus outlined his ministry. You know, the purpose statement that comes before the statement of the Great Commission, and it's a well placed, to use the vernacular from our community, right on statement. And the question of now, how do we enflesh that? Well, the word is irrespective. And I know the statement, irrespective of. There are some of us who are prepared to argue that statement should not be there.
That's what I'm pressing for.
I think it's. Let me see if I can find it here. Invite and include persons in membership, leadership, and mission, irrespective of race, sex, or class. It's irrespective of. It's not quite as strong as without regard for.
But I wonder if that is still inconsistent with the...
No.
Well, you could argue that in order to get to a point of showing no partiality, you have to deliberately structure participation for all.
That's right.
And I'm very much in favor of that deliberate structuring, and I don't think that is irrespective of. I think that is specifically respective of.
Well,
in order to ensure full inclusiveness.
Yeah.
You bet.
We
that's what we're going to do. I think that ought to be clearly part of our purpose as well.
There is some debate as to, subtle shift in words that came from other documents. Other documents used to read without regard for. There's an insistence now that we might have to operate with full regard for and with full respect for those differences that are extant in our society, especially the sex, race, and class one. Yes?
And you were responding to the question about your personal feelings about this whole thing. What came to my mind as you were doing that was that, in a way, the quotas are an admission of our guilt and an act of repentance.
Oh, yes, yes.
You know?
That statement is one that was used with a great deal of regularity.
Oh.
The commission. In addition to the one that I used, a self-imposed discipline, a way of saying, "Hey, self, I know you want to do it. You know, and I really know you want to do it." It's kind of like the Apostle Paul talking to himself. You know, "I know you really want to do it, but if left to your own design, are you really going to do it?" And self says, "No, I really won't. I really won't." And then self says, You really got to do something to make me do it. I know it's right. I know it's the honorable thing to do, indeed the righteous thing to do. But I really won't do it.
Not yet.
Time isn't right. Yeah. This is not the appropriate time
right.
to do it. And then, you know, the debate goes on. If not now, when? And finally, we have to be rather deliberate about these arrangements. As I said, especially with the sex and the race and the class thing. We have no problem, as I said before, with so many ALC, so many LCA, and so many AELC. We have no problem with that.
Or with geography.
We have no problem with geographical representation, with quotas that are geared specifically to geographical representation. But the sex and the race thing, that's the contentious one. Well, yes, but not... Well, you're right. From the clergy vantage point, it really is. People with physical disabilities, under sex, there's an A, sexual preference questions. Since the church is getting older, you know, Dick Newhouse. Again, now if somebody goes out of here and says I quoted Dick Newhouse, then I'll do
positive.
If I quote Dick Newhouse positively, yeah. I'll deny that when I'm there. Yes, Bishop, sir. Yeah, he says that we have to look at other kinds of things. You know, he says ad absurdum. You know, kinds of arguments can come up, and that issues that he might raise may appear to be trivializing the question. Let's have a quota for the handicapped. And for the neglected and growing numbers, now in the millions, of the retired who are over, say, 75. And if national proportions are pertinent, as the proposed system assumes, why not have representation based on actual population distribution in the country, regardless of where Lutherans are, relevant to the church's life, or other quantifiable cohorts amenable to computerization, political conservatives, and liberals, diverse theological orientations, high church and low church, German, Swede, Norwegian. Well, I had already done that one, Dick. Surely our managers can, like the Mikado, make up a not-so-little list of groups entitled to a quarter. Now, it's at this point that Richard starts to trivialize the question. He does not mention young people. He does not mention, you know, he does not mention something that some of us have mentioned in a document that we've written entitled A Church for Our Children. So yes, we have talked about other kinds of marginal groups within the church being represented, and talking about the establishment of the possibility of a quota for them. But right now, we are debating, and excuse me, hung into the big three: lay, clergy, race, sex. Although we do not use the word race in the text, primarily because there are other kinds of revelations. See, race is an invention of up people. It was a way of defining folk. You know, folks went to Africa and said, what are those? You know, those are Africans. They're different from us. Now, how can we define them? And hence the five great race thing. We believe that color and cultural ethnicity is a gift of God, while race is an invention of white people to explain why people might be different. So we use people of color, or we use ethnic cultural identifications. But right now, those are the big ones. And not that age and some other things are not just as big. It's a question of establishing what we call healthy precedents by giving full debate, honest debate, to the ones that dominate people's consciousness right now. Yes, Bill.
It is understandable that you get really involved in these things we've been talking about here, as far as especially the Lutheran Church. And some are afraid that Boston the Shuffle is going to be, again, keeping an emphasis on the theology of the church. What now guarantees or safety factors is being advocated to keep that always at the foundation and the forefront of the thinking regarding a new Lutheran church?
That's a very interesting one. When the ALC, LCA, and AELC theologians met, we were sure that we were all sure that there was going to be a big theological fight. And so these theologians met, and they, just so that you know how it happened, the LCA and the AELC theologians lined up on one side of the table, and they were all ready to attack the ALC theologians, primarily because the AELC and LCA theologians knew that they had the right theology. And they knew that the ALC had the wrong theology. And so the very first question was, now, what about this statement in your constitution, this inerrant word statement?
Yeah.
And the ALC theologian says, yeah, what about it? Well, you know, what about it?
We don't like it either.
And they said, well, aren't you going to explain to us why you have that thing in here? Said, no, we don't have any emotional investment in this thing. In fact, we want it out too. Horror of horrors. No theological debate. And the consequences are a great theological statement, a good theological statement, faithful, I believe, to Scripture and to the Lutheran confessions. No, I think it is held to form. Theology will be the Cadillac of the church's task, and everything else will grow out of our understanding of theology. Thank you.